Welcome to the Casey Kowar Show, a celebration of words. I'm delighted to have as a guest for the first time today, James Swain. We'll be discussing Mr. Swain's new novel, Midnight Rambler, published by Ballantine Books. And first of all, Jim, thanks so much for appearing on the show today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Casey. Thanks for having me on.
Jim, with Midnight Rambler, this is something that's a little different for you, isn't it? You wrote a series, the Tony Valentine series, which has become very successful, but it seems like you're kind of moving in a little bit of a new direction with Midnight Rambler, and it's a novel that once I started reading it, I couldn't put it down. And if you could explain the genesis of going from the Tony Valentine series into writing Midnight Rambler with the protagonist of Jack Carpenter.
I'd be happy to, because it was an interesting experience for me as a writer. I was under contract with Ballantine Books to do a series, the Tony Valentine series, and I was getting ready to start the 10th book in the series. They had published 7 at that point, when I happened to meet a gentleman here in Florida where I live who is an abduction specialist. He specializes in finding missing and abducted children. And the book is dedicated to him. His name's Andy Vita. And I became fascinated. I asked him if he could explain to me what he did, and he said, you've got to forget everything you've seen on television and you've read, and I'll give you an education. And I wanted to understand the field. I had a family member that was abducted, and I grew up hearing stories about this, and I didn't really understand the impact that it had on this family member, and I just didn't understand the field as well as I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
I was also aware of an abduction, a thwarted abduction that had taken place at the Magic Kingdom in Disney World in the early 90s. I used to own an advertising business, and Disney was a client of mine, and we did a lot of business together. And a Disney employee had told me about this little girl that was abducted in the park and how her abductors transformed her into a little boy and nearly got her out. And those things had all been sort of rumbling around in my head, and here I meet this gentleman, Andy, here in Tampa, who this is what he does. And so we went out to lunch, and he started giving me case files and material and books, and spent hours and hours talking to me, and then a case that he became involved with, he got me involved with it in terms of explaining things to me of what was going on during the actual case, actually picked my brain at one point. Did I think someone was telling the truth? I thought the person was lying. I turned out I was right. But I became very emotionally wrapped up in this subject matter, and I decided it would be great material for a thriller. And I started writing Midnight Rambler, and it was kind of funny because I didn't tell my publisher, I didn't tell my agent, I just told my wife. And I wrote a draft, and my wife read it. My wife's my editor,
mm-hmm.
My chief editor. I have a wonderful editor at Ballantine, but my wife is my real sounding board. And she just immediately cottoned to this character. His name's Jack Carpenter. And she said, you should continue doing this. This is just, she felt it was better than anything else I'd done. The Carpenter character is very tied to his the people that he tries to find, especially the kids. And that's sort of how it started. It was a very organic sort of beginning. And when my agent submitted the book to Random House, to Ballantine Books, which is part of Random House, the reaction immediately was, we want to publish this book. We want to publish many of these books. Let's come to some sort of agreement here. And we quickly did. And so the Ballantine books, although there are more of them that are done, and my publisher has them, they put them on hold so that they could publish Midnight Rambler.
Oh, that's exciting. That's exciting. It's nice that you took the risk and it paid off. And Jim, one of the things about Midnight Rambler, I mean, it is the kind of book where you start it and you can't figure out where to put a bookmark in it. Jack Carpenter is a very, he's kind of a tortured soul, and he's drawn to a world that is kind of similar to the world really that Tony Valentine lived in terms of, you know, some grifters and some scam artists. But he really has a good heart, and he has a relationship with his dog Buster, which is, I mean, I was laughing so hard in some of the scenes that I think my wife thought I was crazy. And part of the effectiveness of Midnight Rambler is you can be dealing with a very serious subject matter and still infuse humor into it.
I'm glad you felt that way about Buster. A funny thing happened with this book. Jack, the basis for Jack, years ago, the Jack lives in an area just south of Fort Lauderdale called North Dania Beach. And I went to a bar in North Dania with a friend of mine, and it's the basis of the bar. Jack lives above a bar. And there was a stool there in the bar right next to the cash register, and I was informed by the bartender that there was an ex-cop who sat on that stool. And he made sure the place didn't get robbed. And there was a ball next to the stool, and it was for a dog. And that was this ex-cop's dog.
That's funny.
So that was the basis of Jack. I mean, that took place over 17, 18 years ago. So Jack sort of been in my head, and I knew he was going to have a dog. Buster is actually based upon an Australian Shepherd that my wife and I own named Buster. And he's a unique dog in that he's hysterically funny, he's very lovable with us, but he's what they call a potential fear biter, and that is that he doesn't like the outside world, and he can really run sort of hot and cold, but he's so incredibly loyal to us that we could never think of getting rid of him, but we have to be very careful when we have him with other people. And that was sort of the basis of Buster. I'm not sure that sounds too humorous, but he was sort of the perfect dog for this character, someone who loves Jack but hates the rest of the world, and I thought that sort of mirrored how Jack is.
Yes, and Jack also, in Midnight Rambler, one of the parts of the novel that I really enjoyed was Jack's relationship with his daughter, Jessie. That's very, I think, a very tender side of the story, which is a nice counterbalance to some of the depravity that you write about in Midnight Rambler.
I wanted to point something out, that I have a tremendous respect for cops. I think it's the hardest job in the world. And the police people that I've met, both FBI and several police that I know who work on finding missing kids, have told me that it is the hardest work to do in law enforcement. It's the most gut-wrenching. And what I discovered about all of them is that they're family people. They're very, very close to their children, very close to their spouses. Very often the work can hurt their marriages and hurt their relationships with their families, but they remain very, very close to them. It's the driving force behind what they do. And I wanted to be very loyal to these people who helped me with the book, and it just was sort of a natural outshoot that Jack would continue to remain loyal to his daughter and his wife, even though his wife has left him and the family has sort of busted up. They still are a unit. They're still very tight with each other. And I felt that really kind of reflected what I saw in the people who helped me write this book.
That's interesting. Part one of Midnight Rambler is titled Mercy, and part two is titled God Blinked. And Midnight Rambler is also, it's a story about redemption, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think all my books are about redemption. I think my Valentine books are about redemption. And I think this book is very much about redemption. It's sort of the theme. I had that pointed out to me years ago by a reviewer, and I'd never really sat down and thought about it, but when I look back, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jim, if you would, talk for a minute about Simon Skell and the impact that he has had on Jack Carpenter's life in Midnight Rambler, because he plays a critical role at several points in the novel.
The novel, Simon Scale is the Midnight Rambler. He's a serial killer that Jack has put in jail. But as a result of Jack beating him up during the arrest, Jack Carpenter has lost his job. His life has fallen apart. He's gotten sued by Scale's family. He's broke. And his wife has left him. So this case has really destroyed him. And when the book begins, the case against Scale is unraveling, and Jack's trying to keep Scale in prison. That's the impetus sort of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Scale is based upon a real serial killer that was here in Florida named Oscar Ray Bolin. And Oscar Ray, I don't think, is as well known as some of the other characters we've had down here. Florida has had, you know, Ted Bundy had his final killing spree here. Eileen Wuornos was here. The Ginsville Ripper, Danny Rollins, was here. And quite a few others. Notorious serial killers. Oscar Ray isn't as well known, but he was probably more deadly. He lived a few miles from my home. And he was captured in the late 1980s. He did not fit the profile of the serial killers that you'll normally see. He was good looking. He was smart, married, had a successful trucking business. And he's been described to me as a killing machine. It's believed that he, although he was convicted, I think, for killing 6 or 7 young women, believed he killed 30.
Wow.
And he was only 28 when he was arrested. So we're talking about someone who was very, very prolific at this. He also had this amazing magnetism about him, and his ability to manipulate the media. He was treated like a rock star down here. The way they covered him in the paper, the way he got his cases continually brought back into court. During the trial, a woman was seen flipping him notes. She was an attorney. She later left her family and married him. And he had this just amazing impact on people. And I used him as the basis for Scale. And I used a lot of these things that Oscar Ray's still in prison. I believe he's on death row. And I used a lot of this basis of what I saw Oscar Ray do to people, to his lawyers, to people in the courtroom, as the basis for Scale. Interestingly, as a side note, the man who helped me with this book, Andy Vita, the gentleman I dedicate the book to, we found out afterwards, Andy said to me, after he'd read the final draft of the book, he said, you know, this guy Scale reminds me of someone I've been working on, a case, a cold case, and it was Oscar Ray.
I'll be darned.
I had no idea that he knew about Oscar Ray Bolin, and he didn't realize that Scale was based on it. So it was kind of a funny coincidence.
That is. And Jim, if you would, I mean, when I first got to Galleys and I saw Midnight Rambler, I mean, I started playing the Stones song in my head, and I kind of thought that's probably, you know, had something to do with the book before I started it, but that was a song that really captured a generation, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, very much so. The song is the basis of the song is that when I was doing the research for the book, I was reading an investigative case guide about serial killers, and which was given to me. It was a guide that was published by the Justice Department. And part of the guide talked about paraphilias, which are sexual obsessions with non-human objects. And very often, the majority of serial killers have paraphilias. They have obsessions. And I'm not the first writer to talk about this. I think Tom Harris was the first writer to talk about Thomas Harris in Red Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been aware of the song Midnight Rambler. I heard it when I was a kid, and I remember reading the lyrics and realizing that this was a song about the Boston Strangler. And when I started the book and I found out about paraphilias and how most serial killers seem to have one, suddenly it clicked in my head that I would use this song, Midnight Rambler, as being Simon Skell's paraphilia.
Mm-hmm.
That he has this obsession. But it's not just with the song. It's with the live version of the song, which is in the documentary Give Me Shelter. And because Give Me Shelter, if you remember that documentary, it was done of the Stones tour in 1970, which ended at the very ill-fated concert at Altamont Speedway in California, where there was a riot. 850 people got very badly injured. An African-American man was murdered in front of the group while they were playing. It was recorded, him being knifed to death by the Hell's Angels who were guarding the Stones while they played. Other people were killed during the concert. I think there ended up being like 5 people killed. It was just a disaster. And that concert was sort of the end of the Woodstock era, the end of the general, you know, the Summer of Love. That was mm-hmm. that was sort of the end of it. And it that plays very heavily into Simon Skell's paraphilia, that violence, and that song both being in that same film. Here you have this homage to the Boston Strangler, this song, and then, you know, 10 minutes later you're seeing people getting murdered while the Stones are playing. And that's his paraphilia. Those two kind of get linked together.
Okay. Yeah, it's very effective, I think, the way you use it. And was that the kind of the working title you had for the book as you were writing it? Did you kind of know that was, or kind of think that was going to be the title as you started writing it?
Yes. Yeah, from the moment I have to have a title when I start. I'm one of those writers that just has to have a title, and I wrote Midnight Rambler, and then never changed it.
Jim, talk, if you would, for a minute about there are the Midnight Rambler in the novel. Part of his dementia is a fascination with prostitutes, and you use the phrase one-stop shopping in one of the paragraphs. And that and one of the things I really like about this novel is that it really teaches you about a part of life that maybe you weren't really aware of, and some obsessions that people have and how dangerous they can become. But there are some very well-developed characters in the novel that are, the way they make their living is as prostitutes.
Well, one of the things that I'm going to, you know, I have a tendency to give long answers to things.
No, that's fine.
One of the things that got me when I started to write this book, when I was talking to my friend Andy Vita about his work, Finding Missing Kids, I said, what's the hardest part when you find a missing kid? And he said, dealing with thrownaways. And I said, what's that? And he said, these are kids that are thrown away by their families. And sometimes, like, you know, the school will report that they're missing, or someone else reports that they're missing. And he said, and we would track them down, and we would discover that they'd been thrown out of the house.
Oh, jeez.
Mom didn't want them anymore. Dad didn't want them anymore. Whoever they were staying with didn't want them. And they were just out there. And I said, well, what would you do? And he said, well, you know, I'd try to help them, get them into a shelter, and try to do as much as I could. But if they were 13 or 14 or 15 years old, there wasn't a lot we could do. Maybe get them into a foster situation. There's something like 150,000 kids like this in the U.S. now. And they rely on the help of people like my friend Andy, who will give them a card and say, hey, if you need something, call me. Maybe that's the first adult who's ever said that to them.
Mm-hmm.
But what I discovered was that these thrownaways, and many of them are young girls, they will get into these lives, prostitution, or working in massage parlors, or places like that, to survive. They have no skill. And they literally have to survive, otherwise they're living under a bridge. But the potential for victimization is horrific. Because they are female, they are very, very often victimized by all sorts of people in society, by predators and by people in the sex industry and whatever. And that's something that I have in the book, is that that's who Skell victimizes. He's not just victimizing prostitutes. And some people who have reviewed the book have said he victimizes prostitutes. No, he doesn't. He victimizes women who were thrown away, who got into the sex industry. The women who don't have people who can help them. They don't have a brother or a boyfriend or someone to help them. They have been hurt by, you know, society is not there for them. In the book, the victims, the seven victims, are all people that our guy Jack has helped. Young women that he helped out, got them off the streets, tried to get them to see doctors if they did stay as prostitutes. In one case, there's a woman he has gotten together with every month. They have a pancake breakfast, and she's still a prostitute, but she shows him her bank account because she's saving up money to open up a nail salon. And these people are different. They are really living on the fringes and really trying to get out, to climb out of the abyss. And that's Jack's relationship to them. And he recognizes that that's why Skell has been attracted to them. It's because they are such victims.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Now, Jim, now that Midnight Rambler is out and it's in the stores, it is in the stores now. Excuse me, I'll do just a quick edit here. Chuck, I'm going to say that again. Chuck's my editor, because by the time, Jim, that we post this, it will be in the stores.
Okay.
So let me just go back to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I should tell you, too, the cover that you saw, It's much different.
Okay.
Yeah, they redid the cover and they retypeset the book. It looks quite a bit different than the product you saw. If you saw it, you'd go with that. The same book I saw.
Okay. Interesting. Well, Jim, now that Midnight Rambler is in the stores and is attracting a new audience for you, what is it that you found most energizing when you shifted from the Valentine into Jack Carpenter and Midnight Rambler? Did it, you know, how do you feel about it now? What are you happiest about as a novelist about what you achieved in Midnight Rambler?
I think we did about 14 or 15 drafts of this book. And when I read The Galleys, I said, well, this is the best book I've written, far and away.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thriller. I love thrillers. It's a mystery. It's also about a guy's life and his relationship to people who are having tough lives. Most of Jack's friends have tough lives. And I felt that I had achieved something that I'm not saying I hadn't with my other books. I love the Valentine books. But this was just a step in another direction. But what I also was important to me was that Jack finds missing kids. He finds people. And that's not just about finding people. It's about reuniting families. It's about making things whole again. And I had a line in the book that when I was reading The Galleys, that I don't remember writing it, but it really fit. Jack helps a couple find their daughter, and the father says to Jack, I never got your last name. And Jack says, it's Carpenter. And the father says, that works. Carpenters fix things. And I realized that's really what this guy was about.
Mm-hmm.
You might not always like his methods. You might not always agree with his tactics. But in the end, he makes things whole. He brings families back together. He reunites people with their kids. He fixes problems. He fixes problems. And that, to me, was really...
Absolutely.
And I felt that with this book, that, and you know, with creating him, I was able to accomplish that. To, you know, that was how I felt when I was done with that.
That's great, Jim. Another person that you mentioned in the acknowledgments is you mentioned Michael Conley, and has Michael had an influence on you or affected your work at all? Did you discuss this novel with him as you were writing it?
I've met Michael 4 years ago in the Dallas airport. I was on a book tour. He was on a book tour. We happened to meet, discovered we lived in the same town. We get together about once a month and have lunch. And good friends. Michael's really adopted me and helped me with a lot of things, as he has many other writers. He's mm-hmm. I think Mike's the best crime writer in the world, but he's also one of the best people I've ever met. But I purposely didn't talk to Michael about the book. I didn't really talk to anybody except my source material. Michael was very gracious to read the book before, when it was in, you know, galley form,
mm-hmm.
And was very encouraging to me about it. But it was something that I just wanted to, I hate to say, just do it on my own.
Sure.
But I did want to do that, and wanted to go out and create something. But Michael's work, I think Michael, every time Michael publishes a new book, I read it, and I get a re-education about how mysteries and thrillers are supposed to be written. I think his books are as well structured as anything that I've ever read in the field. And, you know, so to me, the education comes really from reading Michael's books. And I have this added benefit of having to also know him. But his, you know, it's just, to me, the great education comes from reading his work.
Sure. And Jim, were you concerned at all that if you told people what you were doing, they would say, well, I don't think you should do that because you've got a successful series going?
I was.
Yeah.
I was.
So, I mean, I think the way you handled it was brilliant in terms of just going ahead and doing it and also doing the Tony Valentines at the same time. So, you know, if they didn't like it, it wasn't like you you had stopped writing.
Right. And if they hadn't liked it, then nobody was going to know.
Right.
So, you know, best way to do it.
It would have stayed.
Don't announce what you're doing.
Right.
You know?
It would have stayed in your drawer in your desk under lock and key.
Yeah. And it's been funny, too, because when I have a following for the Valentine books, which my publisher has described as cult-like.
Mm-hmm.
And as an example, today I got a phone call from one of them, a gentleman who lives up in Pennsylvania. And he was quite disturbed to hear that this new book was not a Valentine book. And so I had to describe it to him over the phone. And he said, okay, well, that sounds good. You know, I'll get it. And but I've had, you know, I probably had about 100 emails and phone calls from people wanting to know when the next Tony Valentine book was coming out, only to hear that I'd gone off into another direction here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's very important. At least it's been important for me to do. And I learned something in writing this book. My wife said it to me. And I think it's one of the best lessons I've learned as a writer. I used to own my own business, and I owned it for 20 years, and this was true with the business, too. Nothing good came without hard work, without a certain failure in the beginning, without not conflict, I'm struggling for the word, but without a certain amount of turmoil and struggle. Nothing good came without struggle. That's mm-hmm. what I was looking to say.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true with the novel. I think was it 14 or 15 or 16 drafts of this book. And as each draft was done, it got cleaner and cleaner, and I got closer to what I wanted to get to with this man, his inner turmoil. What his life has become. His life's a train wreck when this book starts. And that struggle was very, very satisfying. And I think that's the case with just about every good book I've ever read. Mm-hmm. There's been struggle there, and the struggle has led to something worthwhile, and something that the writer wouldn't have accomplished had they not, you know, been up till 3 or 4 in the morning for a couple of weeks in a row wrestling with it. And that's what I got out of this book. And I hadn't been struggling with my last Valentine books.
Mm-hmm.
They had been almost writing themselves, because Valentine is such a unique character. And I felt, you know, it was good to get back to that.
That's great. Very well said. Jim, I want to thank you so much for your time today. We've been discussing Midnight Rambler, published by Ballantine Books. It's a great novel, and congratulations on the excellent buzz and reviews you're getting. And Jim, I look forward to catching up with you down the road when the next book comes out. And good luck with Midnight Rambler. And thanks again for being on the show.
Oh, this has been a pleasure. Thank you, Casey.
Thank you.